Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiwitz, and today we'll be studying Shoftim Perek Yudalit, Chapter 14. We left off our last chapter with Shimshon as somebody who had a divine oracle, a Malach Hashem, coming to predict his birth. We also learned that he will be a Nazir, and he will be Kodesh, sanctified to Hashem. And this begins, the process begins at the end of Perek Yud Gimel. We learn that his mother had a baby. She calls his name Shimshon. And we learn, Vayidal Hana'ar Vivarcheu Hashem. God blessed him. And then the very last pasuk, Vatichal Ruach Hashem L'Pa'amo B'machaneh Dan. And the Spirit of God starts to almost thunder within him in his tribe of Dan. And our expectation after reading Perek Yud Gimel is that we'll approach a leader who is holy, who's kadosh. Maybe we have a picture in our mind about what that leader might look like. What are the words that he might say? And the first few things that we find out are actually very surprising. So Perek Yudalit starts out with two stories about Shimshon. We're going to read these two stories, talk about how unusual they are, and try to make some sense of them. Pasuk Aleph. Vayered Shimshon Timnata Vayar Isha b'timnata mibnot plishtim. So the first thing we learn about Shimshon is that he goes down to Timna, which is a plishti city, and he sees a woman there from the plishtim. Vaya'al vayageil aviv l'imo vayomer isha ra'iti b'timnata. So he tells his parents, I saw a girl there from the plishtim. Va'ata k'hu ota li l'isha. Take her for me as a wife. Now, like any good Jewish parents, his parents are very surprised about his choice. In Pasuk Gimel, his father and mother say to him, Ha'ein bivnot achecha b'chol ami isha, ki ata holech lakachat isha mi plishtim ha'arelim. Right there, you couldn't find a nice Jewish girl among your own tribe that you had to go find a woman from the plishtim? And Shimshon responds to his father and says, No, ota kachli. No, take her for me, ki hi yishara be'inai, because she's the one who's right in my eyes. She's the one that I want. And then we close the story in Pasuk Dalid, va'aviv v'imo lo yad'u ki mehashem hi. But what his father and mother didn't know was that this was really from God, ki to'ana hu mevakesh miplishtim. Shimshon was looking to find an excuse to fight with the plishtim, and the strange request was really from God. Okay, story number two. So Shimshon is now engaged to this plishti girl. Vayered Shimshon va'aviv imo timnata. So Shimshon then goes down again to Timna. And I don't think this going down and the repetition there of he continues to go down is incidental. Vayavo ad karmei timnata. He gets to the kramim, the vineyards of Timna. And all of a sudden Shimshon sees a group of lions coming roaring out to greet him. Pasuk vav, vatitzlach alav ruach Hashem. So again, he has ruach Hashem. We already saw that at the end of Perek Yud Gimel. Again, ruach Hashem comes on him, and he rips up the lion as if the lion is small animal, a gedi here. He as if it's not a lion. You know, in his hands, it's like nothing. V'lo higid la'aviv v'imo u'li'imo et asher asah. He doesn't tell his parents what he did. And Pasuk Zayin, so his parents weren't with him. They were with him in general, taking him down to Timna, but they were not with him when he kills the lion with his bare hands. So he goes down, v'yered v'yedaber le'isha v'tishar b'enei Shimshon. He went down, he speaks to the woman, and still she's right in his eyes. And he goes back, he keeps going back and forth, and he comes back to see this dead lion that he killed with his bare hands. And he finds that now there is a beehive. There's a group of bees in the sort of the inside of this lion, and inside the skeleton is honey. So Shimshon scoops in with his hands. He takes the honey. Vayelech haloch va'achol. He walks and is eating it as he goes. Vayelech alaviv ve'elimo. Vayitein lahem vayochlu. And so he goes, this is Pasuk Tet, to his father and his mother, and he gives them this honey, and they eat it. Below hegid lahem ki migviat ha'aryeh radah Hadvash. And he doesn't tell them that it was from this, I guess, this corpse, the carcass of the lion that he took the honey. Okay, so two very strange stories. What do we learn about Shimshon? So one thing we note right away is that he has this superhuman strength. He's able to rip up a lion with his own bare hands. We also see that women and integrating with the Plishti women is going to be something that he's going to do. This is going to be his method. In both of these, really, the emphasis on his strength and also on the women pulls out this idea that Shimshon is actually incredibly physical. And how does this actually align with the way that we first met him? We meet Shimshon as a spiritual person. We meet him as someone who's a Nazir, who's predicted by Malach Hashem. And everything we learn about him here, though, is that he is an incredibly physical person. And I'll just say that we're in good company because his parents also seem to not understand him. And he doesn't disclose anything to his parents. So our initial reaction and confusion is echoed in his relationship with his parents. And given everything that doesn't make sense here, it's not surprising that a chida, a riddle, is at the center of the rest of the perek. So we meet Shimshon again on his wedding day. He is marrying this Plishti girl that he has chosen, and the Plishtim, the enemy, give him 30 companions to be with him on his wedding day. And Shimshon tells the companions, "I have a riddle to tell you, and if you get it right, then I'll give you 30 sets of clothing and 30 linen tunics. And if not, you're going to owe the same thing to me." And here's the riddle. He tells it to them in Pasuk Yudalid. "Vayomer lahem," he said to them, "Meha ochel yatsa ma'achal umeaz yatsa matok." Right? From one who eats comes food, and from strength comes something sweet. And they are just unable to figure this out, which actually makes sense. This isn't like one of those riddles that, you know, sometimes people sit around and tell each other, where if you could really just go through the details, there's like something that you have to hone in on and then you can get the riddle. This is something that was Shimshon's experience. He's giving them something to describe his experience. There's really no way that they could figure this out. So finally, they approach his wife, his brand new, his Kala, and they say to her, "Tell us the riddle, or," and there's a big or here, "we'll burn down your house and the house of your father." So it's hard to really judge this new wife of Shimshon when she tries to entice him to, you know, tell her the riddle. And she cries, "Vatef eshet Shimshon alav, vatomer," this is Pasuk Tet Zayin, "rak senitani velo avtani," "you hate me, you don't love me, you told this riddle to my, you know, to the people of my nation, but you haven't told it to me." And you could see already, by the way, that she, you know, maybe she's not so innocent here. She sees that the emphasis on the differences between them. There are different tribes, and tribes that are in conflict with each other is not lost on her. And Shimshon responds in a, not a great way to respond to a new bride, but although we understand here with the context what he means, "Vayomer la," he says to her, "Hinela avi ule emi lo higadeti v'lach agid," "I haven't told this to my parents, and I should tell you." The not telling his parents is always a dividing line for Shimshon of things that he feels that others can simply not understand. Finally, she wears him down, and he discloses the riddle to his wife, who in turn goes to tell the 30 men. And in Pasuk Yurchet, they come to him and they say, "Great, we figured it out. Mama tok mitvash, what is sweeter than honey? Ume az me'ari, and what is stronger than the lion?" Now, Shimshon realizes right away that the only way they could have known this is if they got it out of his wife. So he gets very angry. And then in Pasuk Yotet, "Vaititzlach alav ruach Hashem," Hashem again, this is, I think, the third time that we've seen these words, ruach Hashem comes to Shimshon. He gets this strength, the superpower that he has. He kills the 30 men. He kills 30 men. This is 30 different men. He takes their clothing and he gives it, those clothing, to the 30 men who solve the riddle. And the parak closes by telling us that Shimshon leaves in anger back to his parents' home, and that his wife is given to one of the men who had accompanied him at the wedding. Now, this all leaves us with many, many questions that we're going to return to over the next two prekim. But let's talk about it a little bit. Who is Shimshon? What motivates him? And I think we can read the story in two ways. If we go back to the first four psukim that we read in this parak, there was an emphasis there on seeing and on eyes. So just to review for a minute, remember Shimshon went down to Timnah. He saw a woman, Vayar Isha B'Timnah. He went to his parents. He said, Isha Ra'iti, I saw a woman from the Plishtim. Please give me this woman because she is Yishara Be'enai. She is the one who's right in my eyes. And in turn, his parents don't understand, but they go forward. And one approach to Shimshon, and this is from Chazal, the Gemara in Sota says, Shimshon halach achar enav. Shimshon went after his eyes. Lefichach nakru plishtim et enav. Okay, so here's a little spoiler. The way that right before Shimshon's death, the Plishtim end up gouging out his eyes. And the Gemara brings this up as an example of midah keneged midah. This is a way that God punishes in a way that's comparable to what went wrong, to the sin. So Shimshon followed his own eyes, and therefore that's why the Plishtim gouged out his eyes. And I think that way of reading these psukim emphasizes the fact that Shimshon is following his eyes. He sees this woman. He desires her. He comes back and he says, I want her. She's right in my eyes. And Chazal are picking up that even at the beginning of the story, Shimshon is very motivated by the physical, by the beauty. But there's another way to read, and maybe this is the opposite extreme. For example, Rav Tzadok interprets these psukim and Shimshon in general by saying that nothing Shimshon did was by ta'ava, by desire. Everything he did was l'shem shamayim. This was his method. It wasn't that he desired this woman. It was that he realized that the only way to fight the Plishtim without an army, he has no army at that time. He's a lone soldier. But not a lone soldier like, you know, in the way we usually talk about it, like, let's say, a soldier from another country who's, you know, operating, like, you know, let's say who's in Tzava, like in Israel. But he is literally alone. The only way to do it is this is the method that he has to use, but everything was l'shem shamayim. And these are two extremes of the approach. We're going to have to play with this approach as we continue to read the stories. But what do you make? Let's close by talking about the mashal. Because what do we make of this strange, I'm saying it's a mashal, but this riddle, this chida that Shimshon tells the people, the significance that he sees in the honey that he finds in the carcass of the lion that he has killed. So Shimshon is in fact sharing with them his hashkafat ha-chayim. This is how he approaches his life. He recognizes that his methods are unconventional, that his methods are the lion, the strength, the physicality. But in that is the honey, right? This is a outside, it's an external piece, but there's honey on the inside. But there is a warning that lies there for Shimshon as well. And it's unclear how Shimshon interprets that piece of it. But Avram Kariv wrote an article about Shimshon. It's actually called Me'az Yatsa Mar, which is a play on that pasuk. Instead of Me'az Yatsa Matok, from strength came sweetness, he wrote Me'az Yatsa Mar, from strength comes bitterness. And he said there's a message for Shimshon there. Message number one is, he quotes a pasuk from Mishle, Echol dvash harbot lo tov. It's not good to eat too much honey. Yes, honey is sweet. Honey livens people, and Tanakh talks about honey as something that can give back a certain degree of life force. But at the same time, eating too much honey is going to get you to a bad place. It's something that you can only have in moderation. And Kariv also points out that halachically, the lion, the dead lion, was tame. So going back, and since Shimshon was a Nazir and he had to refrain from being with anything that was impure, halachically he should actually not have come back to the lion or eaten. He shouldn't have eaten something that was within the lion. And Shimshon's logic maybe was that tuma, impurity, is permissible because of the goal, right? I need this impurity because I need to get to the honey. But it is so difficult to make that kind of decision. And Shimshon is really alone. He has no mentor. And the question that I would say haunts the story of Shimshon is, does the end actually justify the means? And that's something that we'll need to explore as we continue with the story of Shimshon. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmat, Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.